So, what do you think about Dracula kicking it in the 70s?
I actually really like this movie.
Crack open a cold box of wine or pour something cold on ice because it's the Binge Watchers
So recently, Dave and I watched The Horror of Dracula, which comes out from Hammer Studios in '58. Hammer Films is kind of brilliant. It's a family-owned studio from England. Back in the '50s, they were kind of doing something pretty incredible because what they did to change up the horror genre was to add color, specifically Technicolor film. If you don't know some Technicolor, Google it, dig up some history, go to your local film archive, or go to archive.org and start to look into Technicolor itself. I've noticed, Dave, that I'm attracted to movies in Technicolor. Like,
There
big time.
is something very surreal about it.
Yeah, it's very unique. And it's gone. But I wonder if a digital company will ever figure out how to mimic it. They haven't
Well,
quite figured it
they
out.
kind of have. There was a
Oh, you
movie
think
that
so?
came out 2 or 3 years ago that replicated that look. It was called The Love Witch. I think it might even be on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
Like,
I thought you were describing the technique, and you were saying the technique is called the Love Witch.
no. The movie is called The Love Witch, but
Oh, okay.
it replicates that Technicolor kind of look.
So, Hammer Films did this ingenious thing where they wanted to reinvigorate the horror genre, and at the time, most horror was in black and white, and that had showed, like, atmosphere, but could downplay the gorier aspects of horror, like people being able to handle blood, right? So Technicolor brings blood kind of into reality. And so they get rid of this monochrome world and they start doing things like Curse of Frankenstein. Basically, they're reinvigorating all the universal horror type monsters at the time. So they're taking characters from the 30s, but we're in the 50s, bringing something new and brilliant to the screen. So they play around with some other movies like they were working with the BBC to develop something called the Quartermass Experiment, which I haven't seen, but some people in the US might have seen it as the Creeping Unknown. I'm familiar with that title, the Creeping Unknown, but I think I've come across the title, but I don't think I've ever actually watched that movie.
Well, it's hard to say because that's also an era where there's a ton of movies with the creeping. I
Yeah,
think there's also
exactly.
like the Creeping Terror.
Yeah, you're right. They want a broader market. They're going to get into horror, but they're going to take it to a new level of appreciation and popularity. And I think it's a couple different things. It's the storytelling that they're using, the types of stories they're telling, the actors that they bring into the situation. It's kind of a mixed bag. Like, I noticed that their main characters are these top stage British actors, right? Like they're like classically trained actors. They got like it's like almost applying Shakespearean level theater to horror movies, but then they kind of pepper the rest of the cast with these really kind of not even B movie players, just like basically cardboard cutout actors. You know what I mean? Like the main characters, big talent, swinging dicks, if you will. And back then, folks, the '50s, they wanted their dick swinging. Today, who knows? Because you can't even sing a Christmas song about two people falling in love anymore without pissing somebody off. And
Oh my
that's
God.
besides the point. Like that's a whole episode in itself. And I almost want to just like if no radio station will play that song anymore, I'm like, okay, the podcast is gonna play it every day until the end of time. But I'm divulging. This has nothing to do with Hammer Films or the Horror of Dracula. So I guess we should really stay on point because we're trying this whole new format where we stay on point. So let's stay on point. Okay, so. They're gonna tackle the Horror of Dracula, which is loosely adapted from the Dracula novel. The heroes are more active participants of the story, but they've changed around some of the roles. Like, there's no Mina Harker, there's a Lucy still, and pretty much every other vampire hunter besides Van Helsing is kind of like taken out of the story, except for the exception of like Jonathan Harker. But there's no Quincy Morris, And Arthur Holmwood, as far as I can tell, is like the Dr. Seward or Sweward character from the books, but all his doctor attributes are merged or like blended in with the Van Helsing character, if that makes any sense at all. I guess briefly, here's what the story is, folks. If you haven't seen this movie, you can get it for free on archive.org, but I recommend, I mean, you can also spend $3 and watch the better version on, like, Amazon Prime. You know what I mean? A fully restored, like, HD version of the movie is probably the way to go, because they found a negative of the movie and put it back together when they were putting together the Blu-ray and all that crap. So, this is the story laid out by Google. Look it up. In DVD covers, it says, on a search for his missing friend, Jonathan Harker, the vampire hunter Van Helsing is led to Count Dracula's castle, and upon arriving, Van Helsing finds an undead Harker in Dracula's crypt and discovers that the Count's next target is Harker's alien fiance, Lucy Homeworld. Homeworld? Homewood. With the help of her brother Arthur, Van Helsing struggles to protect Lucy and put an end to Count Dracula's parasitic reign of terror. The only supporting cast is interesting is Michael Goh, playing Arthur, is Alfred Pennyworth from four of the Batman movies. Well, later he will go on to make the Batman movies starting in the 80s with Tim Burton and Michael Keaton. Now, Carol Marsh is in a pretty famous movie. She's in Brighton Rock, and she's playing Lucy in this movie. I know what my favorite scenes are, but let's back it up, and if Dave wants to introduce either Peter Cushing and his style of acting and what he's done and what he does, or if he wants to talk about Christopher Lee, I guess I should ask you, well, before I ask you to introduce one of the main leads, either the antagonist or the protagonist here, and depending on which side of the coin you're on, you know, Dracula could be your hero in this story, and maybe Van Helsing is the villain. Who knows? I guess it depends on how you view the story, you know?
Depends on who, if you like a hero or an anti-hero. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean, like, some people could pick up the book of the novel Dracula, and they could say, well, even though it's told through all these other characters, really the sum of the book is, it's Dracula's story, and other people could say, nah, you're gonna go down the road with Harker, you're gonna be on Harker's side, or X, Y, and Z, you know?
Right.
So, keep me on track, Dave. What was I asking
say,
you to
do? Here, we'll talk about that.
Okay, are you on Team Dracula, or are you on Team Van Helsing? With this movie, if we're just applying the rules of this film.
I'm gonna say, I'll say Dracula, because he's, you know, it's Christopher Lee.
Okay.
Peter Cushing's pretty great, too, but...
Do you have the talk notes I sent over?
Do
you
know I
the,
do.
The little... Okay, cool. You want to tell our binge watchers at home a little bit about Christopher Lee?
Well, yeah, Christopher Lee, I mean, I think, our generation, if you haven't watched these movies, would definitely know him from, Saruman? Or, he was in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings.
But I always forget, oh, it was Saruman. Or, well, there's Saruman, you know, there's, anyways, we're not talking Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's the dude that kind of takes control of his mind. But you're right, Saruman is the wizard, and he works for Sauron. It's kind of
so. I think that's
interchangeable.
Like,
I think that was the. I think the writer J.R.R. Tolkien was hinting that, hey, you know, they're in cahoots, you know.
Right. But I think that's what like our generation, or you know, like I said, if you haven't watched these movies, would know him from. But I mean, you know, sir, we got to point out, sir, Christopher Frank Carandini. Wow,
it's just Chris Lee to everybody.
We'll just call him Christopher Lee, yeah. Sir Christopher Lee, because yeah. He was knighted back in 2009 for his service to drama and charity.
There you go.
But, you know, of course, he was an English actor. He was actually, what I found out, I didn't know from before these notes, was he was a military officer and even an author. And he'd acted for like 80 years. Lee was well known for portraying villains and became best known for his role as Count Dracula, actually starting these movies. Of course, these were a sequence of Hammer horror films. Typecasting situation he kind of lamented, but, you know, hey, that's what people know him for. You know, of course, he's also been in other things such as the James Bond film, The Man with the Golden Gun, as Francisco Scaramanga. I didn't watch those movies. Of course, like I said, Saruman in Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit trilogy, Count Dooku in the prequels.
I think a lot of people probably know him as the Sith Lord Dooku from Star Wars prequels.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, those are both in those era.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's a badass, though. I mean, how he was, I think, like, a couple years before he died, he did a death metal album. So
that's ridiculous. That's funny. I mean, I get, like, yeah. I mean, I do like, Christopher Lee's Dracula is pretty unique. I do like his portrayal of Dracula. Like, and you'll be on board. I mean, they make a handful of sequels, you know? I was reading, like, later on, the later sequels don't include, like, that he's in, like, I think there's 7 of these movies, and he's in, like, 5 of them. Something like that. And how they bring him back every time is actually kind of unique and interesting. That's why I think it's going to be cool to, like, unwrap these films. Because, I mean, it's Dracula, guys. You know the story. At the end, you come to the conclusion that Van Helsing is obviously going to take out Dracula somehow. And then it's like, well, how do you bring him back? And it's not just like the franchise killer movies that were deal with in, like, the 80s and 90s. Like, the ways that he comes back are pretty, like, pretty legit with the supernatural rules that these movies, these Hammer films set up. And there's kind of, like, 3 different parts of the story. It's like the third act is really the chase, where he's fighting Dracula. The first act is really the mystery of what happens to Jonathan Harker. And the middle is more like, it's like a police procedural, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, they're stage actors. So in the middle of this movie, they all get their speeches in. They all get to do their dramatic moments. You know what I mean? And take it or leave it, but I definitely know, like, what my favorite scenes are. You know what I mean? And, like, what I thought, like, if they made another Dracula like this, like, which elements you would pluck from this. And I'll probably credit the director, Terrence Fisher, who worked with Hammer Films on a lot of different projects. And he, like, sets up some of these scenarios, like, almost perfectly. And then, like I said, maybe there's some fluff with the actors. Each one gets a speech, right? You know, or two. Arthur Holmwood, who's played by Michael Goh, is very eccentric in the movie, and he's kind of off color as, like, a sidekick. And so, like I said, like, a lot of the other characters, you can just, they're cut and paste. You know what I mean? Or, like, I don't even care when some of them start to get killed, actually, which is kind of, that's the one negative, I think, maybe, is it doesn't really have a very big body count. But you'd want to care enough to be involved in the characters. So that's one deficit of this movie, is you're literally only watching the conflict between Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
Right. That's I don't know. That's kind of all that movie. This movie really needed, I felt.
And Peter Cushing he's got legs too, man. You know, he's probably best known as Van Helsing the Vampire Killer in the Hammer movies, but he's another guy that sticks out for 3 decades, 50s, 60s, 70s. What's funny about him and Christopher Lee, they're both in Star Wars. He plays a general.
That's right.
Yeah, he plays a general in the first Star Wars, who's, like, one of the most beloved characters. It's Grand Moff Tarkin. The Grand Moff is, like, they actually redid him in a prequel movie. In Rogue One, they actually, like, cropped his face into the, or, like, did that de-aging movie thing or whatever they do, you know, where they splice somebody into a movie. But I guess he had to get his family's permission to do that. But, like, Dave was talking about, you were talking about Peter Cushing as, like, the host in the Tales from the Crypt movie, right? That you were talking about that came out in the 70s, right?
He wasn't the host, but he was
one of the guys, character in one of the stories.
Yeah,
okay, yeah. So, I mean, and he's also in, like, the original House on Haunted Hill, I think. Basically, Peter Vincent is synonymous with horror movies for 3 decades. Like, that's his whole thing.
Right.
And he's more famous than I'm alluding to, folks, so... But again, like, I wanted to focus specifically on this movie, so I don't want to go really on a tangent about my love for Peter Cushing or what he means to the industry, you know, as a hero in horror movies, you know,
Right. Well, I mean, go look him up. I mean, he's a well-known actor.
Yeah, absolutely. So should we talk about how we fill up with the story and then talk about what the critics said and what the audience said in the 50s? Like, should we talk about, like, how we feel, I guess?
Well, I'll let you start. I mean, I think I have a feeling where you're at with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess my review is mostly positive. Like, I like how it just opens and goes right into Dracula's crypt. It's kind of ridiculous that it actually says Dracula on the crypt. That's not the family's name. Like, okay, the legend of Dracula and the myth that went into Bram Stoker's novel was based on a real dude, but it's the Tepish family from Wallachia. Yeah, I think it's called Wallachia. Well, Wallachia or Wack. I might be pronouncing the country wrong, and I learned how to pronounce it correctly for many years, and of course, now that you're podcasting about it, I think it's called Wallachia. Anyway, it's in between, like, anyway, we're talking like 1400s, dude was a prince, he was squeezed in between two different empires, it was like Hungary versus Turkey or something, and he's in between, keeping the peace between two different empires, ransomed at one point, betrayed by his brother, considered a terrible torturer. I mean, that's where you get Vlad the Impaler and all his blood-drinking myths and peeling skin off and eating them and roasting them. All this stuff comes out about this guy. And Bram Stoker sits down in, like, the 1800s in England and writes a horror story, you know, about an immortal prince who swears off, who blasphemes and gets cursed with immortality and, for some reason, a bunch of other supernatural abilities, right?
Right.
But... you know, this movie opens up with, we go right into the crypt, and it's clearly labeled Dracula. So literally, anybody that wanted to kill Dracula could just look for the coffin with his name on it, and you'd be good to go. What I think is right. Really funny is I made a Facebook video about how much blood there was on the coffin, because you zoom in on the coffin, and Terrence Fisher's like, let's put some blood on that shit. And then it's bleeding. There, we don't know where the blood comes from. Like, the only thing I wish is, I wish I heard a lady scream, or, like, there should have been, like, a blood-curdling scream with the blood, you know?
Right.
But you're kind of, like, right into the story. Then, like, dope-de-dope-de-dope-de-dope. Here comes Harker. He's at the castle. Okay. I like this stuff about, like, could you imagine if you took a job with a demon and you're supposed to take care of his library and the demon's obsessed with keep, like, here's the thing about immortality, like, you might actually care about your literature because it's as old as you are, and, like, you hire this dude to come fix your books. It's not a very good, like, disguise, though, or like, you know, whatchamacallit, because Harker clearly doesn't have any skills as a librarian. And then he's got his vampire-killing kit right in his suitcase. You know, right. You know what I mean? So here we are. And then there's a girl there who wants to be saved, who's clearly a pet vampire, you know? Dracula's Brides, which has been established by another Dracula movie. I think the brides are in the Bela Lugosi version, I'm pretty sure. But they're definitely in the book. And, so I hate the Harker stuff, except for when Van Helsing shows up, right? And Peter Vincent is looking for Peter Vincent. That's how closely an homage to Peter Cushing's character, that character from the 80s movie is. I mean, Peter Vincent's whole vampire killer is sculpted out of the way Peter Cushing acts in these Dracula movies. Okay. So Van Helsing shows up at a tavern, and he's inquiring about where Harker is. I like this little detective aspect and how off-putting all the locals are and how suspicious they are and how afraid of Dracula they are. I like that element. I think that's cool. Like, I would like to see a movie where a vampire disappears with somebody's friend and then, like, the guy's looking for the friend. Like, I was like, that could be a movie itself. As long as we don't know the rules of vampires, it would be an interesting movie. And of course, you get the typical things. You get there's garlic all over the bar, you know, and he's like, hey, why do you have so much garlic? Blah, blah, blah. And then the fatal error that Harker makes is like, why doesn't he try to kill Dracula first and not the bride? Like, if he had gone straight for Dracula, he might have been successful. He made a fatal error. But of course, we wouldn't have a whole movie. It'd be over in 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, and again, that's just these stories, folks. Sometimes they literally write idiocracy into the characters, otherwise we don't have, the plot doesn't go anywhere. Like, right. We have to make these, we have to do certain things or we can't, the story can't be told. And then of course they write later on, like, he sees a carriage with a coffin in it. Oh, there goes Dracula, I gotta follow that carriage. You know, like, oh man. And then my next favorite scene, obviously, well, I'm going to talk about the chase, so maybe I'll hold off because I want to talk about the fight and the chase. So I'll turn it over to my co-star David, and he can throw in his two bits here.
Well, I hate to be this guy, but I really didn't like it that much. Now I will say this. Now I'm not saying that it's a bad movie because it's not. It's actually I'll give you my rating later, but you know, it starts off great. I love the music. It really got me into it. And there's the cinematography, the Technicolor is great, the performances by Cushing and Lee are great. But a lot of the secondary characters just didn't do it for me. I don't know. There was a lot of drag in the middle.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The speech, the second.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of speechifying, yeah. So to say.
Yeah,
there's a lot of speechifying. You know, but the things that work are great. Like the effect, some of the effects for this time are really great. The makeup effects and some of the special effects. I mean, you know, some of the images are not that aren't going to leave me are, you know, the burning cross on the one of the bride's foreheads.
Oh, dude, that is incredible. That's incredible.
So there's a lot to admire with the movie. Like, I see its place. I see its place in history. Mm-hmm. And I think this might be the first official Hammer horror movie I've seen. I'm well aware of its reputation, but this might be the first one I've actually watched.
You know, I was reading how they did that effect. I don't know if you had a chance to read about it, but they put wound makeup on the actor,
uh-huh.
And they covered the wound makeup, like the flesh tones, with wax, and then they used the tool or whatever to, as they pressed it harder, the wax fell off and revealed the wound.
Huh.
Yeah, it's fucking cool. Cool as shit. But a practical effect, no less. Obviously, at that time, they had to be really creative and do things almost realistically. Essentially make things, but that's still why certain movies are incredible. And obviously, we already talked about a shot on Technicolor, which is an amazing color processor film. I'm not sure what the aspect ratio is. I don't know, or the film stock. I don't know if it's like 35 or if there's different stocks in Technicolor. You know Technicolor when you see it. We're talking like Wizard of Oz type stuff, you know, like you
Wizard
know
of Oz Gone with the Wind, like the
it looks a certain way. So you once you see a few of these films, you'll get the idea of like, okay, I'm watching Technicolor. That's it, you know. Okay, the stuff that I have difficulty with is like this Van Helsing is so cool when he's fighting Dracula, he can pretend to be dead on a floor, and Dracula won't bite him because he thinks he's already dead, and Dracula only eats living victims, apparently, because Dracula backs off long enough for Van Helsing to get up, and then the chase continues. Before this, though, I guess I need to set up the whole chase. Dracula wants a new bride because they fucked up his other bride, and I'm like, where's his gypsy servants? Because there's Dracula with a shovel, getting his cape dirty, trying to bury this girl in the dirt. They catch him. He's caught in the act. Dracula does not turn into a bat. He doesn't fly away. I was in awe of Dracula is running, like full on sprinting in his cape, back into his castle, being chased by Van Helsing. And I go, holy shit, I've never seen a running Dracula before. Like, what's happening? And then.
I mean, it was badass, but also, why didn't he just fly?
Yeah, exactly. Like, so this Dracula also has no powers. He just likes to wear a cape just for the hell of it. But I was glad he doesn't. I was glad Christopher Lee does, like, this psycho eye thing. Like, he emotes through Dracula's eyes. He doesn't pull the cape over his face like Lugosi did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm glad they didn't continue that device. But for that matter, I guess they could have dropped the cape altogether. But they're wrestling in the castle, and he's still chasing the vampires through the castle. And, I mean, do you like the scenario where they finally get into the study or whatever, and he pulls the thing down, and it's all sunlight, and dude's over with?
Like, actually, I did like that.
Okay.
It felt like, yeah, and again, another great effect with that, you know.
It goes back to that wax technique I was talking about.
Right.
Where they just peel the layers off. Like, they put layers on your face, and then it's literally, like, you're just peeling away. Literally, almost literally peeling away. So anyway, so this is the first movie to bring gothic horror into full color. It's got sexual overtones. It's considered explicit horror at the time. Of course, not by modern standards, it'd be considered mild. But unprecedented at the time, that's what people forget. It's like, it was a trendsetter, right?
Right. Well, you know, I'll be honest, like some of the, like I said, the effect with the cross and some of the other stuff and, you know, what blood there is in there. I was quite honestly expecting it to be a little tamer in some of that department, given the year it came out.
Right. Absolutely.
So, I mean, given if you put yourself in the frame of mind of watching a 1958 movie and then realizing what you're watching, it's like pretty graphic for its time.
Well, I mean, when it comes out, it's a critical and commercial success. Today it holds an 88% rating with Rotten Tomatoes. It has an average of, like, on Google, it's about an 8 out of 10. Generally, the consensus is it's a gore for grandeur, impressive turn for Christopher Lee, and it has a typical Hammer mood, but it makes aristocracy quite sexy. That's a quote that's floating around on Rotten Tomatoes. But at the time, the trade reviews in 58 are saying, let's see, as produced by Anthony Hines in somber mid-Victorian backgrounds and directed by Terrence Fisher with an immense flair for the blood-curdling shot, this Technicolor nightmare should prove a real treat. The James Bernard score is monumentally sinister, and the Jack Asher photography is full of foreboding atmosphere. And then, I guess this Harrison individual or organization, I'm not familiar with Harrison reports, it must have been a big, I don't know, periodical or something in the day. Of all the Dracula horror pictures that were produced, this one made in Britain and photographed in Technicolor tops them all. It's shock and is the most impact. It's great to be considered as one of the best horror films ever made, or it should be, I guess, is what they're trying to imply. I guess they're saying experts handled a delicate treatment of the shock value. And then, you know, Hammer goes on to do a whole bunch of other movies, but of course they're treating Count Dracula. Count Dracula, I guess you would say, like, this is their main stable horse, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they basically redid all the Universal movies for the most part.
Right, right, right. Like, but with the British flair. The Mummy in 59, they'll do Curse of the Werewolf, which is, I mean, he's the Wolfman, but they probably can't use that actual name, and they make that in 61. I haven't seen that movie, actually. I haven't seen Curse of the Werewolf, believe it or not. I don't know what their version of that whole story looks like, or what it. I don't know anything about it, but I'd like to learn. I've seen some of the Hammer films growing up. It's kind of cool to do it this way and go back and see, like, what a grown-up John thinks about these movies. There's a lot of silly stuff in this movie, kind of zany eyebrow raisers, but I had fun. I had fun with those things. Like, I saw Dracula run away trying to dig a hole to bury, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I had a lot of fun. I know Dave said, like, you know, he's not really into it. but...
Well, no, but I will say it makes me, because I've seen other, even though I haven't seen other Hammer horror movies, I have seen other British horror movies from the era, you know, like that kind of fit into the mold. So I'm looking forward to seeing more of them. I just didn't care for this one.
All right, I'm ready for my binge watcher rating. Three films that they can go watch. Binge Now, War of Dracula. Binge Later, The Lost Boys. Binge Never, Twilight.
Yes. Ah, put me on the spot. Okay. Let's see. Binge. You know what? Because I watched it recently, I'm going to say Binge Now, Interview with the Vampire. Binge Later, I'll say Horror of Dracula. And then I'll say Binge Never, The Little Vampire with Jonathan Lipnicki. I don't know.
Wow. It's because I already threw Twilight out as a never, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, where else are you going to go from there?
There's nowhere to go. And what I got myself confused with, because like I said, Peter Vincent is based on the Van Helsing character portrayed by Peter Cushing. Peter Vincent is the vampire killer in Fright Night, which was made in the 80s by a man whose name is Tom Holland, but not the actor portraying the new Spider-Man. So that's also a movie that you can go watch. If you like vampire movies that reference the old school shit that we just binged, you can go check out Fright Night as well. Oh, awesome episode, Dave.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure having you. Looking forward to these holiday marathon movies that Dave and his I think Dave calls her the lady binge watcher, Jenna, they've been kicking out. Hopefully they'll be posting some new episodes like that. But thanks for tuning in for December is for Dracula. And I'm going to force Dave to go down the rabbit hole with me, because I'm going to be kicking off every single Hammer Dracula movie. The next one up, I think, is, let's see, is it Brides of Dracula or is it Taste of, there's so many. Anyway.
Well, I will say, after watching the last three movies, I've learned one thing. I gotta take notes.
Oh, yeah. I'd agree with you, but I'd like to hear your theory on why you gotta take notes.
Well,
I will say one thing, though. I feel personally responsible for what kind of reviews we give based on these movies.
I watched these like over the last week, or the last one over a week ago. And while these are great movies, I mean, they have great things about them. They are also, there's a lot of padded melodrama that I wasn't quite expecting.
Oh, it's like the definition of melodrama. Like pretty much
like
a textbook.
In fact, I was talking about it with a friend who'd seen a lot of these movies and, she's like, oh, but I love Christopher Lee. I'm like, yes, you're right. He's awesome. But when he's not on screen, then what?
crickets, silence, the Carpathian Mountains, a redheaded stranger. An
innkeeper
that knows more than he's letting on, but he doesn't bother to warn anybody who comes down the same fucking road for several years at a time. You know what I mean? Like, that guy's collecting, let's see, the innkeeper's collecting their last meal, so they're coming in, they're drinking his, they're buying his wine, they're eating his food. You know he's taking a cut from the coachman that just dumps people there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, what are we talking about, folks? We're talking about a place called Carlsbad. Although, I think the name of the village changes over the course of some of the movies, even though, like, literally, this is back in the day where, these production companies were essentially, like, operating like little countries, like, their sets did not change. I mean, this is the same Dracula castle that you've seen in the first movie, which you would see over the next four movies. It's the same... It looks like the same wooded area, even. The same road, the cursed road that we're talking about, where all he collects all his victims or people encountered. Like, literally, like, there is no exposition or setup in these movies. Like, main characters just encounter each other along the road, and then they all end up at the little local tavern, which is conveniently located next to the local church. But all funerals take place in the back room of the tavern. So, casts of ale, caskets of dead bodies. Keep that in mind, folks. And what are we talking about? We're talking about December is for Dracula. We've been going through historical documents and records here and rewatching all the horror films. Well, not all the horror films. There'd be too many. All the Dracula films that came from Hammer Films in the horror genre from the 50s, but we actually got to a new decade. Incredibly, we are now kicking it with Dracula in the 60s. So these are the three entries in the series that evolved over 60, 66, and 69. Wow. So there we are. What Dave was talking about, extensive note-taking, could be just because there's a lot of information behind the scenes, and you could try to keep up with the directors and the actors and the fights over the screenplays and the actors' moods and attitudes, or do you just mean, like, trying to pay attention to what's going on and what's relevant and what is just trash?
Yeah, kind of the latter. You know, like I said, I watched this about a week ago, so, you know, I, like I said,
which one?
The Brides of Dracula.
Yeah.
This one, I think, might, upon reflection, might be the best of the next three we're going to watch. At least when Van Helsing comes on.
I mean, Van Helsing does reappear in The Brides of Dracula 1960, but Dracula doesn't. Dracula doesn't swing around again until Dracula, Prince of Darkness in 66. So I guess it depends on, again, which side of the fight you're on. Like, if you're a Van Helsing fan, or you're in Dracula's corner, or neither,
well,
I guess.
I think in this movie, I was in Brides of Dracula, I'm more in Van Helsing's. Well, I guess that's easy to say because Dracula is not in it, but I'm not. The vampires in this one, the brides, are not very as charismatic as Dracula.
Oh, sure. Okay, so what Dave is talking about is The Brides of Dracula, 1960. There's a young baron who's inherited the Dracula's curse, who's kept locked away by his mother, which is the family secret they're trying to hide. And then, of course, every once in a while, she gets a victim for him. They have a nutty maid that works for them. She's in on it. Eventually, he breaks out of his castle, and his mom becomes one of his victims, then she's a vampire, and then he's terrorizing the local village, and there's a school for girls somewhere, which is like the classic Germanic boarding school that you always hear about in the country, which is kind of just like, what's that other movie that they remade? Oh, Suspiria. Yeah, supposedly has a school like that tucked away somewhere. You know, you just hear about these charm schools or something. I mean, and you kind of, I mean, you essentially follow a governess, like a teacher or whatever, or some lady that's going, wait, is she an attendee or is she a teacher? Do you remember?
In
Redhead number two.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be like an instructor there or something, but then she's just kind of, actually, she's just boarded with one of the other girls there, so maybe she's a student. Anyway, this chick, like, she gets lost, the coach doesn't wait for her. The innkeeper, again, he's happy to take people's money, but he doesn't want to really solve your problems, and he has no solutions for you. It seems like the same actor in every movie, although his sideburns change a little bit. It's just basically a slightly overweight innkeeper, but it looks like the same dude. Hard to say, but it's basically the same character. Him and his wife run the inn, and that's it. So she ends up at this baron's castle, and they start talking about like the cult of Dracula, which is a new concept that they only introduce via voiceover as an excuse to have vampires in the sequel. Because, as you said, Dracula's dust.
Right.
You know what I mean? So they quickly found a way to write a sequel in voiceover, which is like, I guess that's how they did it back in the day. Like, oh man, we didn't give ourselves an opportunity to create a sequel, but yet we want to make another one. Okay, you just write something for the title card, dude will say it, we'll accept it, and everybody would just be cool with the rules at that point. Like, it's still the same screenwriter. I mean, it looks like the same screenwriter writes, like, the first couple of ones, and then there's some fight over the third one, and then, like, even the original director is out by number four. Dude's out, you know?
Right.
I think it's because it's starting to fall apart. By the time they reintroduce Dracula, like, he's coming back in when the scripts suck and, like, the movies are falling apart, so it's like, is that, like, the saving grace? Or, like, oh, we gotta get Christopher Lee back in here? I don't know. Between a couple of these sequels, did you know that he went to France and shot a movie called Dracula's Son, which is a comedy about Dracula and his kid?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, okay, so he's getting burnt out about playing Dracula, and he says all these offensive comments in his career about portraying Dracula, and then he shoots off to France and makes a comedy about it. But it's essentially the same Dracula character from the Hammer films, except he has a kid who's going through, like, you know, puberty.
Well,
it's called Dracula.
In all fairness, that was probably during his hungry years. He's like, got to take work where he can get it.
I guess so. But then later on, like, 100 Years of Horror is like a documentary that he will then narrate and star in.
That's a great little series if you've ever watched it, actually.
Yeah?
I don't know.
I might revisit it. I mean, they stuck it on Amazon, so maybe I'll go back.
I mean, it is a TV show from the 90s, so it is very video editor-rific, if that's a word.
It's hardcore video. Video in its glory days. Star wipe.
Exactly. It's that kind of level. I'm not even joking.
Sound on tape with Jock Shuttle editing. Nice. People don't know what I'm talking about. Go get two tape decks and then find out the glorious of cutting it into a tape. Okay.
Oh,
so anyway, the Baron has more charisma than Dracula, actually. David Peele's doing a pretty good job. I looked up this actor, and I'm like, oh, shit, he literally does nothing before or after this movie. He's fucking done. Like, what the hell? Like, but again, I mean, we're talking about, like, these are factory films. Like, they have a set. They use the set for all of their movies. Like, some of these sets are used in other horror films. Like, they have the same actors. You've seen them die in Dracula. Then you see them die in The Creature from the Black Lagoon. You know, it's that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, but that's just strategy. I mean, that most good horror masters or whatever, I mean, use that, like, you know, fucking Roger Corman would do that. Hell, it even went all the way down to, like, Charles Band, Full Moon Pictures. He bought, like, a castle. He bought a land with castles and shit, so he makes a lot of movies with castles in them. You know?
I didn't know he actually owned property with castles on it, and that's...
Well, I mean, he bought, like, he bought Dilo De La Renta's sets, or studio from, in... Italy at one point. I could be getting some of the details wrong, but like he bought like the studio in Europe.
Damn it. I want
so,
that property, Dave. I want so, that like, property.
I mean, didn't you notice like in the late 80s when you watched a lot of Full Moon movies, there was like stuff with castles? Like,
yeah,
yeah.
The whole, there's a subspecies, which is a series of. Alright, subspecies is weird. The main character is a vampire who's actually very much like Dracula. But he has a magical item called the Bloodstone, and he can summon these little goblins to do his bidding. And the goblins are the subspecies, as far as I remember. That's what the subspecies is referring to. And that's a strange, like, the Full Moon movies all exist in the same universe. So, like, characters encounter each other over the course of different movies. Like, Dollman fights the demonic toys.
Right.
And Dollman's his own sci-fi thing, but then, like, Subspecies crosses with a movie called Vampire Journals, which is, if anybody wants to know where Twilight comes from, it's a predecessor, but it's better. More of a horror film. But there's a vampire in there who's connected to the vampire brothers that are from Subspecies, and he's like a, I don't know, an underling of them, but he's trying to escape anyway.
You know so much more about Full Moon.
I think his name is Ash, like the brooding vampire with a heart in Vampire Journals. His name is Ash, and I think later on they kill him in one of the Subspecies movies. Spoiler alert. Like, he goes after the main vampire and his brother. Radu, I think, is the name, and that's... Radu is actually the name of the younger brother of the real Vlad Tepes in real life. The real Vlad the Impaler's younger brother was Radu. But those movies are made in Budapest. And in Subspecies, you get to see, like, them being chased by, like, the police from Budapest. It's kind of funny. Yeah, I know a lot about Full Moon. I've watched a lot of their movies.
But getting back to Brides of Dracula.
Yeah, exactly, but getting
from
back
1966,
to the movies we're supposed
Hammer.
To be talking about.
But so yeah, Hammer has that history, like I was tying it into Full Moon, that they own a lot of sets, they're going to use them.
We've watched a lot of these movies now, and we're in, like, the middle, we're, like, in, like, you talk about how, like, in movies, there's like a second act lull where the second act slows down and right before the climax gets exciting again. I feel like that's where we're at with these sequels, because there's like seven of them, and we're like in the middle of these movies, and it's starting to, the churn is starting to slow down a little bit. And they're blending together, but like I said, each one of these movies has vampiric brides. Usually there's a redheaded victim. Usually it's the redhead goes first. And Dracula dies kind of in silly ways. I mean, like, he's not in the second one. So, first of all, we're just dealing with, like, I feel like this whole movie exists just to bring Dracula back in some ways. Maybe on a metaphorical level, but it takes a half hour before you even see Van Helsing.
Right. That's why I thought this movie was, like, I mean, I could say that about all four of them, but, I mean, this movie really dragged until Van Helsing came on, about the halfway point.
Yeah, it's literally, I tried to clock it, because I kept going, where is he? Like, okay, how are they going to relate this? And of course, the girl falls down, you know, on the coach road, and then he's like, oh, I'll help you, I'm a doctor. And then they, of course, they go to the inn, you know, for some mutton and some ale, and then, boom, there's a priest there. Oh, you're Van Helsing? Cool, man, you might want this, and he hands him holy water. Gee. Like, and then he kind of looks at it, which is really funny, because it's like you see Peter Cushing trying to process his business in the scene, and it's like he's got to indicate to the camera that we should pay attention to that little vial of holy water. That's gonna mean something, folks. You need to pay attention right now. Thank you, Peter Vincent. Not Peter Vincent. I keep saying that. Thank you, Peter Cushing, for showing us the way with your little vial of holy water.
Well, what I will say is, like, watching this one, it felt like, I don't know, maybe it was a little late at night, but it felt like a lot of horror movies after this took from this movie. Like, this movie feels like an early setup, like an old-time setup of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, except...
In what way? Just, like, the damsel in distress angle, or, like, the...
Just the group of friends
violent
that are
sexuality,
in, like...
Sexuality, or, like, what do you, like, which angle?
Just the, in the beginning, the idea of the group of young people getting dropped off at the scary place. I don't know why. I don't know why I got, like, a a Victorian era...
Wait, are you going into Prince of Darkness now? I think you're talking about, like, the four friends in Prince of Darkness.
Oh, crap. Am I... like you said, these movies
around.
Blend
okay,
together.
We're not quite there yet, unless you want to wrap up... Okay, I'll just do this. Okay. So we've already established that he needs that holy water. The Baron's out, and he decides to play around with all the girls at the school because they have no security. Somehow... Peter Cushing playing Van Helsing. Somehow Van Helsing manages to get himself bitten like an amateur. Like, I feel like in the original movie, he kind of warned Jonathan Harker on how to handle this Dracula shit. Then he shows up in Brides of Dracula, and he's fucking it up from, like, the very beginning. He falls under their hypnosis. He, like, lets them talk him into some bad ideas and go into places he shouldn't go to. He also tries to fight them at night, which seems like that's like Vampire Killer 101 shit. But then also, the vampires suddenly turn into bats in this movie, which there's no precedence for this because we haven't, like, if the first movie established the ground rules, there's no superpowers except for drinking blood. Like, Dracula doesn't even hypnotize people in the first movie. But now these vampires are, like, suggestively telling you to do things with their eyeballs. They can turn into bats. And holy water is suddenly a thing, which we didn't even know if religion was a weapon in the first movie, really. It was more just like people were superstitious, clinging to the cross or clinging to, you know, cloves of garlic, right? Mm. Like village superstitions. So, and again, you chase Dracula through his castle, you knock some shit over. Somehow they end up at a windmill. I don't remember how they got to the windmill, to be honest with you. That's when I was kind of tuning out. But they're in a windmill in a fucking barn. And then shit gets lit on fire. They leave Van Helsing there to transform into a vampire himself. And, like, the Baron, you know, Dracula Jr., what have you, Baron, or Dracula's nephew, whatever, we don't exactly know the cult of Dracula. We don't even know if they're blood relatives or just, like, they were having sex with Dracula in the forest and they became vampire. I mean, it's very unclear exactly. Anyway. They just needed another vampire, and they killed Dracula. So, again, you know, here he is. So, they're fighting with him, but then, like I said, dude gets bit. He decides this is a good idea. Instead of just drinking the holy water or pouring the holy water on his wound, he burns himself first. He's going to try to burn out the infection, apparently. And then he pours the holy water on it. And it magically dissolves the wound. He's not going to turn into a vampire. And what I'm thinking, if there's some kind of, like, chemical transfixiation here or transmorgification, and, like, we're talking about, like, there's some bacteria or some... I don't know what you want to call that. Is it supernatural or is it, like, is it an infection?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Exactly, right? And then he pours the holy water on it, and the thing goes away. So I would have been happier with, you're a doctor, dude. You think you have a bacterial infection. That water might have certain properties. You clean it out, you're done. Not this burn it first, then throw the holy water on it. But I guess, I mean, in 1960, that must have seemed like a good idea. Like, hey, this will be cool, and this will be cool in a movie. Let's do this. Windmill burns down. It's all dramatic. The brides are confused. Like, they're not very good at being vampires. I mean... Let's face it, folks, they're 1960 eye candy who happened to die, and then they're undead eye candy. Sorry. I don't know what else to say about that. I didn't cast them. I didn't make the movie. I watched it. You're right. Guilty of watching it. They kind of scurry away. I don't even remember if the brides get killed, but, like, the Baron sure does, because then what's left of the holy water gets thrown in his face. He starts to melt. And then, like, I love how Van Helsing kind of just, like, goes and pokes the body. Like, he's kind of like, yeah, got him. That's why I'm a doctor. I poked him with a stick. Dude's fucking dead. Certified. Like, that's it. And guys, that's it for Brides of Dracula. Now we can talk about Prince of Darkness. What Dave was talking about is...
Although, I'm sorry, just real quick, before
ahead,
we
I'll
move
back
on...
It up, yeah.
I do want to say the one bright spot, because I feel like I've been beating up on Brides of Dracula, but I did like one thing, which was, I think you mentioned her, the maid, or the
Oh, yes, God,
there's that scene where the lady, nuts. The vampire was coming up from the grave, from the coffin, and she's just going nuts.
Yeah.
That performance from that lady, she goes off the wall, just so excited, like it was a bright spot of that movie.
Well, see, that was the thing, like, cameras would just turn on and roll while people gave their monologues. I mean, this was that era.
Right.
You know, this was like opera on film. Like, that's what we're talking about here, grandiose shit. Then you got Prince of Darkness. Starts out, kind of got a party vibe. I mean, we are in the mid-60s, so hey, everybody's hanging out. What's going on? These seem like Americans to me, but they're supposed to be English travelers. Anyway, four English travelers arrive at the tiny hamlet in the Carpathian Mountains. Again, it's the same town, folks. Some movies call it Carlsbad. Some movies say Karlstad. Some movies say something completely different, unpronounceable. So who really knows? This movie calls it Carlsbad, but it's also known as the Domain of Count Dracula. Then a driverless carriage pulls up, and this seems like a great idea to get in with your friends and party. It's almost like taking the party limousine, right? Or a party bus. So this is like the medieval version of a party bus. It has no driver. They get into it. Charles, who's like the main friend, thinks that he can drive it. He can't, and he's telling his friends in the carriage, sorry guys, I want to go left, have to go right. They're at Dracula's castle. They get sucked in. Some dude... I don't know. I don't even know who this guy is. He's got a shitty haircut, and he captures the more gullible version, like, dude, the other, there's two couples, essentially, right? And again, there's a redhead and a blonde, and then there's a gullible guy, and a guy that seems to have his shit together. What's unique about this movie, though, is the fucking, there's a badass parishioner, like, or parish master, I don't know what, I don't even know what kind of, like, they're not Catholics. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know what kind of... It seems like the secular church in this movie is kind of confused. At one point, it feels like the Church of England. Another point, it feels like Greek Orthodox. But then it is some bit of Catholicism because of the rosaries. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like a hodgepodge to me. Can you figure out... Have you been able to figure this out? Like, they're doing funeral arrangements, right? It actually happens before the partygoers are there. But then dude gets off his horse... He's a pretty stocky guy. He reminds me of Brian Blessed, but it's not Brian Blessed. But this guy, he walks a walk and talks a talk. Like, he's actually swinging a bigger dick than Van Helsing is. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
This preacher is like, hey, you're going to bury this girl the normal way, or I'm going to take you all up on blasphemy charges. You guys have ruined my whole fucking day. Bury her normally. Don't drive a stake through her heart. She didn't know vampire killed her. Then he goes and hangs out at the inn. He's drinking mulled wine. He talks to these travelers, they're at Dracula's castle, and then somehow, maybe you remember this clearly, one of them gets strung up, and then he gets bled out over Dracula's ashes by, like, some dude with a bad haircut.
That's right.
Who's the dude with the bad haircut? Like, where did this fucking guy come from? He's just, like, hanging out at Dracula's castle, just kind of like, yeah, you got into the coach with no drivers. You know what I mean? Like...
Well, that was the thing that can... Because I was watching him, like, okay, so Dracula's dead as dead can be. He's dust, as you said.
Yeah.
How the fuck are they going to bring him back? All it took was just some random dude's blood?
Well, and here's the thing. Like, they're... Over the course of these movies, the series, they're picking and choosing which rules in Bram Stoker's novel to follow. And there's very clear guidelines and mythology given out for Dracula, so... They do talk about you gotta scatter his ashes to the four winds, because if any of it's clustered together, he can come back. So, I mean, and nobody bothered to really scatter them. They just kind of left them in the library.
That'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Nobody's gonna come and drip blood on it.
Yeah, and then they talk about, like, you gotta destroy a vampire's coffin, and they just left his coffin right in the open, so whoever this guy with the bad haircut is, that's like, you know... like Andy Warhol, but in 1835 or whatever, like he like with a slightly worse haircut comes out. He's got the coffin in the ashes, and he drains the blood of one of these dudes, not Charles, because Charles got his shit together. Charles's friend, who I don't even know his fucking name, I don't care, he's dead. And then, of course, redhead fucking vampire, dude, guaranteed. Redheaded vampire bride every fucking time. Every time.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, but if we ever do a Dracula movie, we gotta homage that shit and be like, oh, you're redhead, you're dead, you're ginger, you're done. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, man. So yeah, she's out, and then I feel like the couples kind of switch. It's almost like Charles is like suggesting,
hey, yeah, that's true. Yeah,
your dude's dead, she's a vampire, and then it's kind of like they're working together. Dracula seems to have a bad attitude, but I don't know why. He just got resurrected from the dead. Think he'd be fucking happy.
Right.
He also seems to have lost his intelligence, so he kind of came back. Maybe he didn't come back fully. It's like, do you remember, like, Pet Sematary, where you only come back, like, it's only half of you?
Right, like, right. Because, you, yeah, like, you don't fully come behind.
Back? Yeah, so I feel like he's pretty cranky.
I'm just laughing at the idea of just cranky Dracula, like, oh, it's so drafty in here.
His cape got better. See, that's the thing, like, over the course of sequels, like, they change people's costumes, and you just go, like, so who sewed him a better cape? Was it this dude? Like, I want to call him, like, Lurking Larry. Like, Larry who just lurks in the corner. Like, has this guy, like, lived in Dracula's castle his entire life? Like, is this the gypsy servant that was missing from the first movie? Like, has this guy just been there the entire time and nobody noticed him until this movie? You know what I mean? like, he's been there the entire time.
He's like, just in, lurking in the background. He's this is like a
villager that Dracula plucked, has, like, abused for 30 years, gave him bad haircuts, doesn't let him change his clothes, but then says, hey, give me another fucking cape. Sew that shit together, and I'll reward you with, like, I don't know. I'm just imagining this now because I don't know what he rewards his gypsies with. Renfield ate bugs in the book.
Right. The guy here was he actually called Renfield?
I don't know. Was he? Maybe.
He acted so Renfield. I just took him as Renfield.
Well, again, like I said, they're picking and borrowing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm looking at the cast list and I see nobody named Renfield, so he just played it like that.
Yeah, he just played it that way. This is a hard movie to find online. I don't have the DVD. I was looking for a DVD collection that just has the Dracula Hammer films. It's virtually impossible to find that set.
Coincidentally, actually comes out tomorrow on a Blu-ray, believe it or not.
That's funny.
Shout Factory's putting out a Blu-ray of it tomorrow.
Yeah, Shout Factory is good. They're doing like this anniversary edition Blu-ray. I think I came across something like that. Amazon has some of the later sequels after Prince of Darkness, which is great if you're a Prime member. And we're not plugging Amazon. They don't sponsor our show. I'm just saying.
If you want to get your fix, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was talking on something else recently, and I was saying, it's an entry for box office, which is magically going to pop up in people's playlists any minute now. I was talking about how, like, I just want the movies. Like, if you could download a movie to my brain directly, I would take it that way. Like, I'll watch it on VHS, I'll watch it on DVD, I'll find the Blu-ray. I'll go online. Basically, my entire goal is just to get the material. You know what I mean? I had to watch Prince of Darkness on a video site from Asia.
Really?
Yeah. With like,
I found it fairly.
Japanese subtitles on the side of the screen. So.
Oh, I wish you would have told me that. I would have told you a better way to find it. But that's all right. It's too late.
No, it's all right. I don't mind Japanese subtitles. I just wanted to play the movie. You know.
Well, it has like multiple, I don't know what the differences are, but apparently there's like slight differences between the US and the UK version.
That's probably true.
But I'm not sure what. Because in fact, that new Blu-ray has two different versions, so I guess if anybody wants it, there you can go watch two different versions of it.
Their version probably has more suggestive bestiality and necrophilia, and ours has more violence and more technicolor blood, which just looks like actually fuchsia paint. This is how Dracula goes out. Dave was a little confused by this, but we went over this in a Facebook Messenger, and maybe it, you know, made a discovery for Dave. Again, the text, the original text says, you know, Dracula can't cross running water. And the cool priest starts shooting out a frozen pond that Charles and Dracula are wrestling on top of. Because they try to steal the other chick, and they actually catch up to his driverless coach, get the other chick out of the coffin, push Dracula's coffin onto the ice, and then Charles, dude thinks he can just fucking take Dracula out, so he tries, which is really fucking not a good idea, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
But they're wrestling, and then the priest takes out his rifle that he's had since the beginning of the movie, and just starts blasting holes in the ice, and Dracula goes into a watery grave. And then Dave's like, yeah. I didn't know he was a... What'd you say? Like, is he afraid of ice water? Or how did you put it?
Well, I just didn't know he ice water could take him out. Or just... Yeah. I apparently, that was a detail I missed. Again, these movies did not sink in.
Yeah. Hydration? Dracula can't get hydrated? Well, get your electrolytes, Dracula. Yeah, so he goes underwater. That's it. And then... This bastard movie known as Dracula Has Risen from the Grave that comes out in February of 69. First of all, it opens up with a teenage boy riding on a fucking bicycle, so you know you're in for a good time. This is about a small village that receives the full brunt of Dracula's terror after this priest tries to exorcise his castle, and Christopher Lee comes back as the arch-bloodsucker. And he's going after the bishop. I guess they're calling him a bishop. So is he a priest? Is he a bishop? Who knows? There's a niece involved, and he's got to, like... What's weird is, like, he expresses the fact that he's taking his revenge out on somebody. And I'm like, I didn't realize over the course of these four movies that Dracula had vengeance towards anybody in particular. And if that were the case, wouldn't it be against Van Helsing?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because this seems like this is his village, and the villagers there pretty much stick to their rules. Like, it's not usually the villagers that try to kill Dracula. It's the people that get stuck in the village or visit the castle. It seems like most of the townspeople know what the fucking rules are, and they don't ever kind of... They don't really usurp the power in the area. I would even think that Dracula's been paying off the church with some kickbacks over the years. To, like, look the way over some of the murders, you know? We know about a few of them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Some of them get into the public eye. But I think there's a lot that go under the rug, so to speak, right? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and the guy is really weird. I didn't have time to really look up who the actor was, but the priest in this movie, like I said, to the previous sequel... The priest in that movie's a fucking, like, that guy's a badass. He makes you want to put on a collar, go kill vampires fucking right now. Like, really, take up the fucking sword of Christ, go kill some fucking vampires. The guy in this movie, like, you think this guy's gonna just kill himself before he even gets a chance to kill any vampires. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and also, there's no connection to the, like, who, like... The girl dangling from the bell tower has no connection to the rest of the movie. They blame it on Dracula. Then they're chasing Dracula again. They repeat some of the footage from the other movie to catch everybody up about what's going on.
Yeah, this one felt very cobbled together.
Yeah, this is like... But again, I don't... Christopher Lee is there, but I don't get it because everybody else has abandoned this movie. Like... Cinematographers have changed. Directors have changed. The script writers, and I'm not even calling them screenwriters now because there's no effort involved here. This is, like, not even cut and paste. Like, I feel like they had a story that had nothing to do with Dracula, and they just kind of put this movie together. And the bicycle, the only thing I can think is, like, bicycles did start showing up at movies in the 60s. It was kind of a big thing. There was a lot of movies in the 60s that had bicycles. So we're, like, in the early... or late 1800s, early 1900s, but this is a hard movie to get through. This is a, I called it rough. Like, Dave, we were playing catch up on the sequels, and we were like, okay, let's stop here and try to catch up. We're going to binge through three of them. By the time you get to this one, you don't want to watch any more Dracula movies from the Hammer Films family. You really don't. Like, yeah, I don't know what to say besides that. Like, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, and you're like, if it can't get any better than this Risen from the Grave sequel, then you're just done. At the end of the movie, Dracula's like, I got you guys! Ah! And you're like, what?
Yeah.
With the exception of dude does stick a giant stake in his fucking heart, and then but then he goes, you did it wrong. And then, like...
I will say, credit where credit's due. These movies have great stakings, if you will.
Like they, basically, you wait like 90 minutes, and then you get like 10 minutes of action that makes you go, oh, damn.
That's a, you know what? You just kind of nailed it. That's the problem I had with these movies, is they were so unevenly paced. Mm. Like, boring, I mean, and it's not, and anybody who knows me, it's not that I can't stand slower moving movies, but like, there's just like not enough plot to fill these things out. So it just drags and it drags and it drags. And then something happens. Christopher Lee comes on. Oh, that's cool. And then he's gone for a while. Now it's boring again. I just, you know, I watch these. I feel like I'm not doing a service to anybody who might be interested in these, but I got to say, I was disappointed.
Well, they're very... I mean, we could help them navigate these sequels. They can literally go the original, then they can jump into Brides, and they could watch Prince of Darkness. They can skip right over Risen from the Grave. I can tell you that much. They can actually skip the next two sequels and go right to Dracula AD 1972, which comes out, folks, in 1972. But of course, if Dave and I want to keep, like, peeling our eyelids back, and it's almost like we're taking the treatment now in Clockwork Orange, if we want to keep salting our wounds, then we will continue on with Taste the Blood of Dracula and Scars of Dracula. Those two come out in the same year of all things. They both come out in 70, so I feel like that's one movie that they split into two somehow. I hate to say it, but I kind of want to burn off the series, but I really thought we'd do this whole thing, December is for Dracula, and, you know, our buddy Nick had recommended that we extend it to, like, how do we incorporate modern Dracula movies into it, but, I mean, we're getting sucked down to the bottomless pit.
It's pretty soul. I'll be happy to, like, if anybody wants to point out, like, the best Hammer horror movies to watch, but I gotta say, man, like, I know of the legacy of Hammer horror, but this is my first exposure to them, and I don't feel like these were the right ones for me to watch. They just didn't connect with me. Mm. You know, but I'm still willing to check them out, because, I mean, there's great things about them. Like, there's in the first one, like, the fucking scars on the forehead, or, you know, the burn into the cross. The Brides of Dracula had some crazy performances and some interesting stuff. I mean, even though I may have been confused, the ice Dracula getting on the ice finale was pretty interesting. So there's all good elements to these movies, but as a whole,
AD 1972 has like a descendant of Van Helsing versus Dracula, and he shows up in the 70s, and it's modern day at the time, right? Because it comes out in the 70s, it is the 70s. Mm. That, I mean, I was trying to get to Dracula AD 19. That was the whole, my secret thing for this whole thing was, like, get to that movie.
Is that like the best of the bunch?
Like, I think maybe we summarize the other ones. We finish our Dracula for December with Dracula AD 1972, and then I tell you how you get to a movie like The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. Because, by the way, at some point, Dracula took a trip to China to help out some Chinese hopping vampires. Chinese vampire movies are like their own... I have a whole subgenre. You know what I'm saying?
There's a series I've been meaning to watch called Mr. Vampire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man.
Have you watched those?
That comes around because of The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. So the hopping vampires in Asian mythology are awesome. And they have, like I said, they're a whole subgenre of movies. But what we'll do is we'll give you one more December is for Dracula entry. We'll talk about Dracula AD 1972. We'll at least mention the other sequels, but that will be our primary focus, and then we'll talk about maybe our favorite version of Dracula or how it relates to modern Dracula movies. But that'll be a later episode, because David needs to recuperate from these movies that have left the taste in his mouth.
That's not there.
This is the, I mean, and Dave's the film hit, like. What's funny is Dave could have easily found himself enjoying these movies, and it's like wringing his neck to get through them, you know?
Well, I was looking forward to them. Like I said, I was, you know, like, and it's not like, you know, because I don't like older movies. I love older. I'd rather watch, but I'll be honest, I'd rather watch a Bela Lugosi Dracula before this one again. Oh, or dang, these guys.
Dang.
I know that's a threw that in the gauntlet.
That's like J. Sherman Critic.
It's funny you say that. I've been watching those again lately.
Starting to feel like that guy. I get further and further away from actually making movies and just like being pissed at movies that I see.
Stinks.
Yeah. So yeah, so we'll be back, folks, with Dracula AD 1972. That'll be pretty awesome. But that wraps it up, dude. So if you have red hair, I don't know what to tell you. You're definitely going to die tonight because you're going to get eaten by a vampire. It's just a done deal. Like we've already enough evidence to suggest that if you're a ginger, you're dead. That's just the way it is.
Don't hang around European castles.
Yeah, just don't visit Carlsbad. Do not book a trip to Transylvania. I know you've seen those ads. I've seen a lot of Facebook ads lately, you know, saying, come visit the Transylvania. Don't do it. Unless you're Jeff Goldblum and Ed Begley Jr., then you're fucking going to be all right.
That's a deep pull for anybody who knows what you're talking about.
Ah, they're going to have to look that shit up. We can't do everything for them, Dave.
Transylvania,
can't hold their hands while they're binge-watching.
6-5,000. Yeah. I can't remember.
So, what do you think about Dracula kicking it in the 70s?
I actually really like this movie.
Do you?
This was, like, by far, far and away the best one of the bunch, at least for me. Mm. I'm not going to argue with somebody if they say, you know, the horror Dracula is the best, but as far as my enjoyment, I think this one was the best.
Well, this is sandwiched in between a couple of the other sequels. But okay, lay it out. Just give us a couple reasons off the top, off the cuff.
You know, well, first of all, just in terms of a movie, it moved faster. I mean, it didn't lull as much. I don't know, man. Just something. I just didn't expect this to be kind of a swinging 60s or like, excuse me, not 60s, but 70s.
No, you're right, though. You're right, though. I feel like in England, they're like a decade behind the fashion. Because it seemed like the 60s version Dracula wasn't swinging 60s. It seems like swinging 60s, but in the 70s in London, right? It seems
London kind of like set the, you know, that they're still in that mod mode, you know, from like it's the Austin Powers era kind of still.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, what
crushed
Austin Powers
suits
was.
And sideburns, yeah.
Well, that and, you know, like the style of the women, like the main girl, Jessica, you know, just has a very, you know, the hairstyle and the clothes and the particular eye makeup.
Jessica Van Helsing, no less.
Van Helsing, oh.
Yeah, the great great granddaughter or some crap of the Van Helsing we saw in the first horror of Dracula when Hammer Films opened, so. It's bloodlines. You know, keep it in the family, you know what I'm saying?
Well, of course, it starts off, like, in the era of the original movies.
Yeah, it's like the 1890s, and like, the other Van Helsing is, like, duking it out with Dracula on a stagecoach. It's probably their most brutal fight, and then they fall off, and they both die.
Although I will say it's pretty badass that Van Helsing staked him with a broken wooden wheel or wagon wheel.
Well, it sure was an accident. I mean, like, technically, Dracula impaled himself, and then Van Helsing just pushed it in further, which is kind of funny because that's what happens later in the movie. Spoiler alert, in the modern day fight, Dracula looks into a grave and sees that it's filled with stakes and then proceeds to fall into it. And then Van Helsing pushes him further onto it with a shovel. And it protrudes through his back, which isn't his heart. You know what I noticed about this Dracula? He's like an immortal Dracula, because I know we skipped over the other sequels because we were talking about like redeeming ourselves from the series, because we were getting kind of like sequel whiplash, if such a thing exists, like whiplash from sequels. Because we were actually trying to watch them in chronological order for everyone out there and review them properly and do an actual binge watch of, like, let's watch all 7 of these movies and tell people about them. But it was hurting.
Some of them are rough, dude.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's what surprised me. This one, like, I don't know, like, it's cheesy, but it hits, I don't know, man, it just hits the right notes for me. Like, I knew from the minute the music started and there was bongos or conga, I'm like, oh, we're definitely doing a 70s era thing here.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what's funny about the music is, like, it definitely, that's what tells the drama in this movie. It's not like, I will say that the personalities of the teenagers are, like, well-defined, or the young party-goers, whatever, that make up Jessica's group of friends.
Mm.
You actually care a little bit more about them, and they seem to be pretty dynamic compared to the other victims in the other movies. And then
right.
The music is, like, telling the story in such a way that's, like, ridiculous. Like, at one point, Van Helsing is trying to kill one of the vampires with a makeup mirror, like a little mirror from, like, somebody's wardrobe.
Oh, right.
And like you said, you're hearing these drums, like, hit every time.
And, it's, yeah.
Okay, so let's back up. What we're talking about is Dracula AD
1972.
Dracula AD 1972. But I found out when they broadcast it on CBS, they called it Dracula Today. Like, when they started doing home video in the 80s, like, that's when they changed the title. I don't know why. There's no logic behind it. Just, hey, it's Dracula Today. Like, all right.
Okay.
In this movie, Johnny Alucard raises Count Dracula from the dead in London in 1972, and then the Count goes after the descendants of Van Helsing, which is, like, the great-grandson and then his granddaughter. Dave mentioned her already, Jessica, who's completely clueless. Like, why didn't her grandfather teach her anything that he found in his grandfather's notebook? Like, why? It doesn't seem like the legacy is maintained. Although I will say, watching Van Helsing run through the streets of London in the 70s, which much more thrilling than watching him run through the 1800s. And also,
right.
I think he's the most Van Helsing-like. Even though it's modern day, he's the most Van Helsing. Like this is the Van Helsing he should have been in, like, a few of the previous sequels.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but then again, he's a little bit older. Like, maybe he had to age into it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, see that.
By this time, he's playing it for, like, a decade. Maybe or longer.
Oh, longer, yeah. He's been playing it for, like, 14 years at this point.
What's cool about this movie, though, it's based on, like, people that were really kicking it around in a cemetery. And there's, like, you can look it up. You can Google the story called The Highgate Vampire. And, like, there were two guys investigating supposed vampire activity at the Highgate Cemetery in the early 70s. And what is Johnny Alucard? It's just Dracula's name backwards. And that name will pop up in video games. It's a character in Castlevania who's Dracula's son. It's used in other Dracula stories. So that name kind of sits around in pop culture. I'm wondering if this movie created it. I'm not actually sure if it did or not, but it's kind of interesting. The battle in this one is not really that dramatic. Like, there's another sequel. The movie, like, right before it, Dracula gets hit with lightning and gets incinerated. So I would think that's probably the most intense way for Dracula to have died in any of these movies. That's in The Scars of Dracula, which is really just about some dude goes to Dracula's house to have a party, and Dracula doesn't want him there, and then his brother shows up after he gets killed and gets revenge on Dracula, kind of. Finally have a name for Dracula's assistant, though. Dracula's creepy assistant is called Clove. Before that, Taste the Blood of Dracula, which is just three dudes. They accidentally bring Dracula back to life. And they're just like the three dudes in the previous sequel that we watched. So, whatever.
They keep finding ways to bring him back.
They keep bringing him back, and then they keep killing him off in these kind of, like, what seems to be, at this point, random ways. But, anyway, back to Dracula AD 1972, because I felt like that was the first one that I saw, was Dracula AD 1972 when I was a kid, and I was like, Dracula's just walking through the town, like, what's up? And then I saw the Van Helsing character. You kind of know who Van Helsing is if you know the Dracula story, so familiar with that. Johnny Alucard character is weird, though, because he's in the beginning of the movie. He's like...
Well, that's because the guy, that's his descendant.
I wanted to believe that it was also his descendant, but I think it's him. Because he took Dracula's ashes, then he took Dracula's ring, and I was like, did the ring keep him alive for, like, an extra 100 years? Because he was doing black magic the whole time. And then he makes references. He talks to Dracula like he was the one that collected the ashes and held onto the ring while he was gone. And then I'm like, So you set yourself up for your own demise. Like, you decided to keep Dracula's things, abuse Dracula's power, and then bring Dracula back. What do you think Dracula's going to end up doing to you? Make you a vampire bitch.
I took it as in it was, like, something that was passed down through the bloodline, or that, like, it was emphasized, like, his grandfather or his father.
The dialogue. So maybe they fucked up in the dialogue, because he has a conversation with Dracula where he makes a connotation, and he basically says, like, he was preparing for him to get there, and then he says something like, he notices the ring goes back to Dracula's finger, kind of like, automatically, he just flies off or whatever, but it seems like Johnny set it up like he's acknowledging the fact that he's the same dude who was trying to rescue Dracula in the beginning of the movie and then collected his ashes. You know what I mean? He's like chasing him on the horse behind the carriage, right?
Right.
Acting as Dracula's servant or whatever. But then he's some warlock dude, right? He's going to resurrect Dracula during a spell. I love when he goes to the nightclub and tries to convince the other friends that, oh, nah, we didn't murder one of our friends last night. Don't worry. It wasn't a real blood sacrifice. No problem.
Yeah, this felt like this was what felt like one of the first movies that dealt with like the occult or like rituals.
Yeah, it takes it to another level, because previously you're just looking at like vampiric powers and mythology from the novel, and in this one you add the element of black magic, right?
Right. I wonder if it had something to do too with I don't know, in the air, like Charles Manson type stuff, like, because that happened just a few years before this, where they're like, oh, well, this is just creepier, a bunch of kids trying to do satanic shit.
Yeah, the opening scenes in this are kind of weird, where, like, they're a little group of hippies or whatever, or
yeah,
club hipsters were, like, followed some band to a rich teenager's house or something, and then, like, they couldn't handle it, because it was, like, aristocratic Londonites, and they couldn't handle the punk rock or whatever was going on, and then there was like a suggestion that these club hoppers were, I don't know, what do you want to call these guys, whatever.
They're basically the hippies of London at that time, or
so they knew exactly how to time to leave the party when the police would show up, but then like the band is playing, and then all of a sudden the band goes from punk rock to hillbilly. Like, between songs, like, it's the same singer, but then he has suddenly a new outfit on, and he's gone honky-tonk for one song. You know what I mean?
Huh.
I don't know if you noticed that. But
I didn't.
Anyway, did you notice the people having sex under the table?
Oh,
and
yeah.
That one of the friends makes out with some random girl sitting on a couch, and then the party gets busted up? This is all
right.
In the opening. This is all in, like, the first, I don't know, 7 minutes or something.
Right.
And then the movie lulls, just like the other ones. Like, it still lulls during it's like, kind of like, what do you want to call, like, the research part of the movie? Like,
No, I mean, it does, but yeah, I dug this one more. I think, as you said, like, I actually cared about these characters more. They actually gave them a little more to do, because there was, they found other dramatic things to do in between.
They look for their missing friend. A body gets discovered in the construction zone, which used to be the old cemetery and Dracula's old, I don't know, hangout. And now there's a nightclub there, right? Like everything's centered around the nightclub, which is kind of funny. Did you think it was obvious when the boyfriend showed up at her house and didn't walk inside, and then the nanny had to invite him in, and he had the neckerchief on his neck or whatever it is? Around his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, dude's a vampire. Here it comes. But I feel like that was kind of cheap, because we just saw him walk in looking for the other guy, and we, at that point, didn't know that Johnny was a vampire as well, and then, like, then all of a sudden, if the friends aren't eliminated, then they're vampires. And Jessica's character ended up being a dead fish. Because, like, for two-thirds of the movie, it sets her up as a pretty strong character, but then hands it over to Van Helsing to show up and finish the job, when she could have turned into the hero. But not really.
Yeah, that's true. You know, his, what's that guy's name? Alcord again? Or
Alucard. It's just Dracula.
Alucard, yeah. No, I know, but, like, something in my brain can't. I don't know, man. Like, he...
he felt more like Renfield, like than some of the stand-ins of the last couple movies.
Yeah, it was funny. He's a pretty dynamic character, and like he's a good villain, an anti-hero at least.
Yeah, he was just all over Dracula, like, come on, turn me, turn. I mean, that was like the message, like, come on, please, please, turn me, I'm gonna be immortal.
Yeah, I don't like Dracula. By this point, I'm kind of done with Dracula.
He's barely in the movie, and it's his movie. Like, I didn't time it or anything, but it felt like out of this hour and 35 minutes or so, it felt like he was only in it about maybe 20?
Yeah.
10, yeah, maybe yeah. 10, 15?
Yeah, about 10, 15 minutes of total screen time, yeah.
Like, not enough time to have even a presence. Like, I mean, like, he wasn't scary. Even though I'm saying this, even though this was my favorite of the ones, but it's just because it's kind of bonkers.
But they reverse the chase in this movie, though. He chases after Van Helsing. Which is kind of funny.
Like, well, of course he was hard up to get Jessica Van. He's like, oh, it must be her, his daughter, or his granddaughter.
They didn't kill a redhead in this movie. They killed a black girl instead, which is... That's too bad.
Well, yeah, well, that's when that trend started.
What? The minority
has to
be killed in the horror movie first? You think it started with this movie?
I'm not saying it started, just in this era that started.
She's just a teeny bopper, folks. She reminds me of, like, Josie and the Pussycats. Like, Josie from Josie and the Pussycats. As far as I'm talking about a characterization. But, I mean, gullible, I guess, gullible. And way too into the Johnny character. I mean, that's her downfall.
Yeah, Jessica, I mean, even though she's our protagonist, she's kind of dumb.
Oh, I was talking about the other girl. The one who got killed. I don't remember her name.
Oh.
The one who's way into Johnny and is like, is happy that Jessica's hanging out with the other dude. Yeah, I guess I could have written down the characters' names. Didn't do that much research. But, because I know they're all cannon fodder. They're all, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Can't watch it for them. The movie that breaks the pattern of killing the redhead, though, and turn it into a vampire bride. But, as you said, we have Jessica. You know? So. I noticed she was wearing regular clothes in the beginning of the movie, but the time she gets to Vampiric Bride, like, she's got a bustier on.
Right.
And they're lighting her differently. Like, oh, okay, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of obvious now.
Oh, man. But, yeah, I really, this one, even though it didn't have the most Dracula, this was the most fun. At least for me.
Yeah, you know why? It's kind of zany, but it's an upbeat attitude, and maybe they couldn't afford more film, so they like really tightened up even their long shots, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
They really got into the story. It starts right away and it just keeps going. None of these movies are very long, and they don't feel well. Couple of the previous sequels, Dracula has risen from the grave or whatever, that droned. That definitely dragged. That had a lot of drag. Yeah. So, but this one, it keeps your interest for most of the movie. I don't really buy that water coming out of a shower is the same thing as running water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's...
I mean, it was a weak way for the Johnny character to go out. It would have been better if, like, Van Helsing had to duke it out with Johnny and Dracula. Because Johnny basically stumbles around, he gets hit by the reflection from the mirror, and then he falls in his own shower, and it gets turned on, and then he's like, oh, shit, I've been running water. Fucking let me out. And Van Helsing just kind of looks at him, nah, maybe not. What's weird is, like, how the cops are so cooperative with Van Helsing in this movie. That's what I thought. There'd be something different, like the Scotland Yard wouldn't help him.
Right.
They're a bigger element in the following sequel. The one that comes after is Satanic Rites of Dracula, and that's the last appearance by Christopher Lee as Dracula. Oh, that's in 73, but then, like I said, he's going to do a French comedy. I mentioned it on the last Dracula episode we did, but he goes on and does a French movie, which it's the same character. The same Dracula. It's supposed to be the Hammer Dracula. A French comedy called Dracula and Son that comes out in 76. I don't know. And then Satanic Rites is just literally 1970s London, Scotland Yard. I think they've uncovered a case of vampirism. So they call Van Helsing back in. And then it becomes apparent that the culprit is Count Dracula, which doesn't make any fucking sense. He's disguised as a property developer plotting to unleash a fatal virus on the world. How the fuck is that possible when he's dusted again? It literally makes no sense. Like, and then he's pretending to be a real estate developer? Does that make any fucking sense? None.
No. None
whatsoever. Like, I don't even understand how they even get to... That's like, they're like, you think of the production offices, like the bullpens back in the day where they're just throwing darts at the board? Like, they're literally throwing darts at story elements on the wall and then picking the ones that they hit. You know? And, like, and splicing those together. And then they get to the Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which comes out in 74. Dracula, he's going to go to a Chinese village, and he's going to support some hopping vampires that are over there. But guess what? Professor Van Helsing is on a lecture tour, and he's going to fuck up Dracula in China as well. but again, we wanted to talk about that movie because it's more of a martial arts movie, but it establishes there is a Chinese legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, and there's a whole series of hopping vampire movies in China, and like their vampires have different powers and come from a different backstory. And some of those movies are great. I think you mentioned one.
Mr. Vampire?
Yeah, the Mr. Vampire series. So those are worth watching, folks. If you're going to go into this series, I think you should see how it begins, I guess, right? I mean, they should see how they set up the Christopher Lee Dracula and the Peter Cushing Van Helsing, right?
I mean, The Horrors of Dracula, the first one, I mean, it's worth watching just to see where it all started, or, you know, to see, like, one of the first color horror movies. But I think you can skip some of the sequels. I say, honestly, jump right to Dracula 1972 AD. But
yeah, that would be kind of cool. I would say if you got to do three of them, like, if I would plan it again, I would go Hordes of Dracula, Dracula 80, 1972, and then The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. And that's a hell of a night. You know, get a sixer of Pabst Blue Ribbon, get your boys together, get some pizza. That's a hell of a night. You know what I'm saying? Like, that could be a really fun binge-watching evening, is to put those three films together. And what have you, you know?
Right. And there's parts of Brides of Dracula I liked.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting, but it doesn't have anything to do with Dracula.
Right. Well, it has Van Helsing. But,
and I still can't figure out if they don't like each other. You know what I mean?
If, like, Dracula and Van Helsing don't like each other?
The actors. The actors.
I don't know. I haven't heard anything as if any of them had a problem with the other.
I just noticed their stories are not, they're not in a lot of scenes together, and they show up in different sequels opposite of each other. You know what I mean? One pops up in one, the other one doesn't, and the other one does, vice versa.
Yeah, I don't know.
Of course, they're shooting a bunch of other Hammer horror films at the same time. A litany of them, and both of them are in these other horror films at the same time, so maybe there's a conflict of, like, scheduling or something. Who knows?
Maybe.
But I wonder if they were shooting a couple of them at the same time. Like, okay, today you're Van Helsing, tomorrow you're a professor or somebody, you know?
I wouldn't doubt it.
You know? Something like that.
I wouldn't even doubt that.
Yeah. It's clear that Christopher Lee is dialing it in. I mean, like, reflecting on his career, I think he embraces the fact that he was Dracula in all these movies, and is okay with it. Cushing, in the first couple of sequels, Cushing gives you, like, a hell of a, you know, soliloquy performance. Like, he's definitely dedicated and super into it.
Mm.
And then later on, I just like the older, grizzled version of Van Helsing. Like, maybe in my mind, Van Helsing should just be older. And so when the actor gets to that point, where he's played him and has the experience of playing him for a while, I like him better. I don't know. Is that just, like, physical traits, maybe? He's like, not as dynamic. He can't run as fast. Or, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Does that make the... But even Dracula's a little bit geriatric, too, though, but towards the end of this series.
Right.
So, I don't know. What are you got any to add to that? Or?
Well, I mean, like I said, I don't know. Overall, I was expecting to like these movies a little more, but I'm glad I watched them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's also a piece of horror history. I mean, horror film history. So it's always worth a watch for that, just to see where we get certain tropes or things.
All right. Now let's talk about modern Dracula, or Dracula in another film. Like, who would be your go-to Dracula, or is there just a vampire film that sticks out for you?
God, vampire films. Putting me on the spot.
Sorry.
Since you put me on the spot, I think the one that jumps to my mind is it's a George Romero movie, actually, and it's called Martin.
Oh, interesting.
Choice. And I'm going to put a vampire movie in quotation or question mark, because that's kind of the big thing about that movie, is that you got this kid who believes he's a vampire, but, you know, is he really? Is he not? Because, like, he'll... It has a lot to say about mental illness, I think. It's been a while since I've seen it, but, like, you don't... This kid claims to be a vampire, but he does things like cuts people, you know, his victims, he cuts them with a razor blade to drink their blood. You know, because... I don't know. It's an interesting movie, and it has one of the most out there... I won't say out there, but, like, the ending just shakes you, and you're just like... And then you get the stew in it. Like, you know, one of those movie endings where something happens, you go, what the fuck? And then kind of credits roll, or it's just like, before you know what happened, the wind's knocked out of you and the movie's over.
Right. Yeah, that's a good choice. I've only seen Martin, I think, once. But yeah, that's definitely something to pop in and take a look at, or download, what have you. I would say, if you're looking for a psychedelic vampire movie, go watch The Hunger with Susan Sarandon and David Bowie.
I've never seen that. I've always been meaning to.
Oh, it's good. It's damn good. And
because that was like Tony Scott's first movie, wasn't it?
Thereabouts. I'm not exactly sure where it falls. But yeah, people should go watch The Hunger if they're looking for something that's like akin to the, as you said, shagadelic nature of Dracula AD 1972.
Right.
The Hunger is technically a drama, though, but it does some pretty tripped-out shit.
Right. I have to... I know it's one I've been meaning to check out.
David Bowie melts in that movie. People should definitely watch that. Dude melts. All right, folks. Thank you for sticking out December's for Dracula and binge-watching all the Hammer horror films with us. If you have any suggestions for things you want us to binge-watch, drop us an email. Get to the Facebook group. That's where Dave hangs out. He'll see your messages if you happen to message him. we have a website now, bwpodcast.com, or you can Google the entire name if you're so inclined, for Binge Watchers Podcast. We're on every podcast platform, everywhere. And we're not the new kids on the block. We've been around a little while, but hopefully you're enjoying some of the new episodes we're putting together. And what a ride, roller coaster season 8's been so far.